Hi, I'm Tess Vigeland, and this is the Marketplace Money Podcast for the weekend of June 18th, 2010. We're broadcasting from Chicago this week. Coming up, college grads may become a lost generation when it comes to jobs.
I've been hired by an architectural boat tour here in Chicago, and I will be working as a bartender.
Moving back home to Kansas for not sure.
We'll take money questions from a lunchtime crowd at Chicago's Thompson Center, and we'll hear the soundtrack to Hard Times.
You know, the blues isn't all about misery. They say in Chicago you listen to the blues to get rid of the blues.
Those stories and more are coming up, but first, 15 million unemployed people in this country. It's a number you hear a lot these days, but it's kind of like the abstract ones we're getting out of the Gulf Coast. 60,000 barrels of oil a day, 70,000, doesn't really help you grasp the enormity of the problem. So we decided to come here, to Chicago, to get a sense of what it's like to go long stretches without a paycheck. More than 500,000 people are currently looking for work in the Windy City. The increase in job seekers last year was the second biggest of any metro area in the country, topped only by the city we traveled from, Los Angeles. And a recovery isn't coming to this state anytime soon. Illinois ranks 48th in job creation. So what does that look like at ground level? We found two of those 15 million unemployed Americans and asked them to share their stories with us.
Come on, guys, you want to watch TV? Come on, PBS Kids time. Have a seat.
Miles Best didn't have to ask twice for his kids to park themselves on the living room couch. Six-year-old Isaiah and his four-year-old brother Anthony licked peanut butter off spoons while Dad checked email and Mom Iris washed up dishes from lunch.
Well, my game starts at 7, so until then I'll probably be on the computer hunting, okay?
Hunting for a job, as he's been doing for the last month after being laid off from his $32,000 a year IT sales position, the second job loss in as many years. The best is, Iris is 38, Miles is 39, live in the Avalon neighborhood on the city's south side. Boxes fill the small rooms of their Chicago bungalow-style home, because within a couple of months, they'll be moving out.
The house can be a strain when you decide, do I put them in Little League or do we do repairs?
So they sold at a loss and will become renters. Iris worked her way up from coat checker to a managerial position at Chicago's Convention Center, but was privatized out a few years ago. Then she got a $50,000 a year job in human resources and lost that one 2 years ago to the bad economy. She's since gone to a trade school and now sells her services at pamper parties.
Hey, Normandy, it's Iris. Just giving a call. Don't forget tomorrow, 6:30, I'll see you for your mani-pedi.
She's also teaching at a beauty school and taking odd jobs through a program called Put Illinois to Work, part of last year's federal stimulus package. But it's not enough. The Besses have cut their expenses to the bare necessities, but the situation has never been this dire.
Push come to shove, I'm going to find a way to take care of my family.
How?
That is a good question. Whether it's self-employment, multiple jobs, or whatever the case may be. You know, even if we wound up on the street, you know, I'd still be able to take care of my family. I would find a way.
You know? How close to that are you? Are you anywhere near that?
Closer than one would want to be. I would say less than 2 months.
13 miles north of the Besses, in a high-rise apartment half a block from Chicago's Magnificent Mile, Steve Ostrowski is also searching for a job.
Orlando Magic is hiring. I'd have to move to Florida, though. I don't think we're going to do that yet.
He's at the computer in his bedroom office, scouring listings from his college alumni network.
Oh, here we go. General Sales Manager, McDonald Broadcasting Company.
Ostrowski is 38, married, and after graduating from Northwestern, spent 14 years as an ad salesman in the publishing industry. In 2008, he quit his six-figure job to go get his MBA.
Exactly 30 days before Lehman Brothers and all the fun started to happen, so my timing was really bad, to say the least.
That incredibly awkward laughter, a common sound in households of the unemployed. The Ostrowskis aren't anywhere near the edge that the Besses are. His wife still has her job, but his lack of income is forcing choices they never expected to make.
It has slowed down our family planning process, to be quite frank with you.
So you're hoping to have kids by now?
Yeah, but I think the other big challenge has just been not working. Not being around people every day, not being a viable part of society, because you start to feel as if you are an outsider looking in.
Can you go ahead and hold tight until I get dinner done, okay?
Wait on me. Carrots, please, please, please.
Iris Bess has combated that particular challenge, being an outsider looking in, by cobbling together enough work to deal with the family's bills. These days, they're deciding from month to month which ones will get paid. So you'd think at this point that a job, any job, would get an automatic yes from Miles.
There are jobs out there, but it's a matter of what you are willing to do.
And what are you willing to do?
I'm willing to do the job that will sustain my family. I don't mind working nights. I don't mind working weekends. Yes, I could go work at McDonald's, but I will forego a position that's not as fruitful.
Even though you say you're a couple of months from being on the edge.
Yep. Never say die.
That's a calculation so many of today's unemployed have to make. Take whatever job you can out of desperation and perhaps set yourself back years in your career, or wait and wait.
Tonight is going to be a large salad with chicken breast, roasted chicken breast that I made earlier in the day. So one of the advantages of being home is I can actually make a good solid dinner and have it ready when my wife gets home.
So far, Steve Ostrowski hasn't been offered anything to even turn down. Most of his interviews, he says, are for jobs that may open in the future.
You know, you go through peaks and valleys. Some days you're really positive and energized because you've gotten some good leads. And then when those don't work out, it's really, really deflating. And I've been willing to take steps backwards to move forward.
These are situations that you will probably see your neighbors going through. Personally, in our circle, we know people who have had to uproot their families. You know, our parents was probably the last generation to have a job tenure of over 15, 20 years. Nowadays, it's like you get a five-year run, you're doing good. You know, and what we're going through is the microcosm of the world. It's happening everywhere.
It saddens you to know that you have a bunch of skills that can't be used. And that is no different than the person on the South Side who has a bunch of skills that can't be used. And we're both really frustrated at different points in our lives and in our careers, but still sad, if you will.
Steve Ostrowski, Miles Bess, and Iris Bess, unemployed in Chicago. To put the stories of this country's 15 million unemployed into context, we thought we'd go to the go-to guy when it comes to jobs. John Challenger is one of the founders of the country's oldest outplacement firm, Challenger Gray & Christmas, conveniently located, for us at least, here in Chicago.
So glad to be here with you.
We talked outside one of the city's many significant labor sites, a nondescript boarded-up building called Socorro's Hall. In the mid-1800s, it housed the Packing House Workers Organizing Committee, and meetings there eventually helped lead to the establishment of an 8-hour workday.
You know, and what's interesting is the 8-hour day has now turned into 24/7, 365
yes.
work.
Yes. And in fact, let's talk about that.
Okay.
You know, even within those 8 hours, assuming that you're limited to that, productivity these days has just gone through the roof, and more people are working harder within those 8 hours.
Companies, you know, manage their numbers so closely. They're constantly looking at the tasks people are doing. They're checking productivity numbers. They're driving it forward. But I think it's really due less to trying to cram everything into the 8-hour day and just more about the fact that work now has expanded to include all of our time. And so there's just the idea that there was this clear boundary between when you worked and when your personal time was has just disappeared.
Let's talk a little bit about today's economy. There doesn't seem to be a lot of agreement about kind of where we are in the recession. Is there going to be a double dip? Are we actually in a recovery? But one thing everyone agrees on is that if it is a recovery, it's a jobless one. Why is that so clear, and what does that mean?
Well, normally, recessions are followed by jobless recovery periods. So after the early 90s recession, it took 15 months of jobless recovery before the jobs started to turn around. It took 18 to 19 months in 2000, 2001. So we're now into about 11, 12 months of that same period. We don't know how long it's going to go, but what happens is as the jobs start to get created, a lot of people who were sitting on the sidelines come back in. They want those jobs, and so unemployment stays high, even as the economy starts to recover. And then also you have a lot of businesses that are just very cautious about hiring for fear that we're going to go back into, say, a double-dip recession, or their businesses are just going to turn south.
As we've been talking to folks here in Chicago about the job situation, one story that we're hearing a lot is that folks are having to take almost whatever job they can because there's so much competition. And, you know, they're taking these jobs at significantly lower paychecks. Do you ever get your hiring power back once you've done that?
Well, I think you do. I think it's the right thing for some people to do after a long recession to go take jobs, to get back to work, to bring in income. And, you know, as the economy recovers, I think they'll be able to find jobs. In fact, I think it'll work in their favor to say, I worked through this. I wasn't going to sit and wait for the job to come to me. And I do think that some of those jobs, those better jobs, are going to start returning. I think people will find those jobs.
What's going to get us back to where we need to be? There's an awful lot of ground to make up.
Well, I think the economy depends on the growth in exports, our ability to tap in to what happens around the world and really dominate that market. Also, energy is crucial. Healthcare is crucial. Those are probably the industries that are going to drive change. Last, I think it's entrepreneurship and innovation. Most of the job growth comes from small businesses, so I think that's a key to the future.
What is the primary piece of advice that you're giving to your clients who are looking for your help right now?
Well, stay really engaged. So it's so easy when you lose your job to, you feel like you've been rejected by your former company, and then everybody you go out and see in some way or another rejects you because you haven't got the job. So you just have to keep at it because it's so easy to sit at home in front of the computer and wait for the job to come to you, and you can't in this environment.
John Challenger, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Marketplace Money from American Public Media, and we are in Chicago talking about jobs this week. And of course, each week we answer your questions. This week we're going to try something a little different in honor of this trip to Chicago. We thought we'd set up shop here in the Second City and tackle job-related personal finance questions for folks who just happen to be passing by on their lunch hour. So I'm here in the atrium of the Thompson Center. Now, to answer Chicagoans' questions, we're joined this week by one of Chicago's best financial experts, Elise Glink. Hi, Elise.
Hi.
Now, you must get a lot of questions about job-related money matters all the time. What are you hearing?
You know, it's really tough for people on Main Street. I know on Wall Street in Washington, D.C., they keep talking about the green shoots and the green shoots and the green shoots. And, boy, wouldn't I love to see some of those. For so many people on Main Street, life is about long-term unemployment.
Yeah.
Or if you have a job, you've taken a forced furlough or a pay cut, or you're just not getting the same level of benefits that you were, which means more money out of your pocket. And so my back-of-the-envelope calculation is about half the people in this country aren't earning what they once were. And worse, some don't even have any expectation of being able to find a job that pays what their old one paid.
So this is really a sea change in the notion that you can have a career for life.
I don't think anywhere in the world can you be employed for life anymore.
Yeah.
And in the United States, what's clearly happened is that we've seen an end to this kind of one job per career movement that really defined employment in this country for decades.
Well, let's take some questions. We've got someone sitting here with us, and why don't you tell us your name and where you're from?
My name is Anton Brooks. I was born and raised in Chicago.
How old are you?
I'm 54 years old.
And what kind of career have you had? What kind of jobs have you held?
So before, I had a sales job for like 15 years. Matter of fact, I used to stand on the corner up here right on Randolph and solicit people for the Sun-Times, Tribune, Comcast Cable. Newspaper business kind of, you know, tanked. So.
Yep. Yeah, we all know about that.
So now, you know, I went to a free program, you know, where they teach you janitorial skills over an eight-week program. And so I got my certificate last March, and I've been looking for a job ever since then, you know what I'm saying?
What is the program that you took the job training from? Have they provided any after help for you to connect you with some possible employers.
Yes, they have, but it's a church-based program. You know, they get funding, I guess, from the city or somebody. So they're limited to, you know what I'm saying, basically, you know, they give you the education. They'll give you a few leads, but it's not that many, you know what I'm saying. Like I say, I just grabbed the phone book like I did back in the 70s one time, and I just started from, you know, janitorial, and I just wrote down every janitorial service, and I'm going to hit every one of them.
You sound like the kind of person who, if there's a job to be found, you're going to find it because you're doing all the right things. So you've been able to go through the phone book and look for companies that match what you're able to provide them with, which is really smart. And now you've got all those pieces of paper in your pocket, and you are hitting the streets. And I have to give you a lot of credit here because you're actually doing all the things that I would tell you to do in order to find a job. And now the question is there a job for you? And I hope there is.
Yes, ma'am, I hope so, too. I mean, everybody needs their flow mop, right? So,
gosh, yeah, I know.
We all need janitors. So, hey, like I say, I'm going to give it the best shot I can. You know, God willing, everything will come through for me.
What was that like for you to realize that you needed to transition into a new job, new skills?
It was kind of hard because the other job I had, it was a sales job, and it was a lot of fun. It wasn't work. It was just talking to people every day, you know.
Yeah.
Like I say, right there on the corner, you know, every day. You got to do something. You just can't just sit in the house and shoot yourself in the foot, you know what I'm saying, and cry to yourself, you know.
What kind of money were you making in your previous career?
In sales job, it was fantastic. Some weeks I make $200-$300, and, you know, some weeks I can make $1,000. I can make $300 in a day, so I was happy. I was a happy camper, you know.
And now what are you thinking your income could be?
$250, $300 a week, probably $400 every 2 weeks or something like that, you know, if you're lucky after taxes and things like that.
Well, at least I think that's another hallmark of this recession is that folks are realizing that perhaps the job that they once had it's not going to come back. And you got to make a change.
I mean, you're talking about taking a 50% pay cut if you can land a job from what you were making before.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. But, you know, this is the way it is. So my mom, my father, they lived through the Depression, you know what I'm saying? My pops, he get mad at you if you owe him a quarter, you know. So if they can make it through the Depression, you know what I'm saying, in their situation, I ain't got nothing to cry about, you know what I'm saying? I just got to keep on trying, you know.
You do seem like you would be wonderful in sales. Have you thought about going into sales?
I've tried, man. Like I say, I've worked for 15 years straight, you know. But, hey, it is what it is.
Elise, any advice as he heads out on a job hunt today?
One thing that is often very helpful is to try and network with people that you know who already have the job that you want. So if you know anybody in your world, or you can ask people if they know people who are in the world of janitorial services or building engineering services.
I stop every guy I see with a janitorial shirt on.
It's great. That's exactly what you have to do, because if they have a job already, then they typically know people who hire for those jobs. And then when they come up, you know, if you've already met them, it's nice to see you. When a job comes up, then hopefully they'll think about you. So.
Yes. All right. Thank you, ma'am, very much. Right.
Well, thanks for stopping by, and
sure,
best of luck to
you.
Well, we're joined by another Chicagoan. Welcome to the table. Tell
Hi.
Us your name and where you're from.
I'm Jackie Smith. I'm from the south side of Chicago.
And how old are you?
I'm 29.
And what's your job situation?
I actually just started a job about 2 weeks ago with the Chicago Botanic Garden. Before that, I was unemployed for about 7 months.
7 months. What did you do during that 7 months?
I'm in graduate school right now, so school pretty much kept me occupied. So
I have to ask, are you dealing with student loans from undergrad still?
No, I'm not.
No.
I actually got a full scholarship for
Good for
undergrad,
you.
But I am paying for graduate school.
Yeah, so what's that bill going to be?
I'm looking at maybe
$40,000.
Yeah.
Education is an unbelievable expense, but if you're going to spend money, I'd rather you spend it on you and your educational prospects, because with a graduate degree, you're much more likely to earn back that money than even with an undergraduate.
I look at it as an investment within myself. It is a bill, but I don't look at it as a negative thing. So,
given that you've made the investment, what's your dream job?
Because I did corporate America for so long, I really want to do something in nonprofit and like in the service, because I'm getting my master's in public service management. I'm really interested in sustainable urban agriculture.
Urban agriculture?
Yes.
Do you have a garden?
I'm sad to say I don't.
No.
I'm actually working on starting my bucket garden.
Bucket garden. I love that. So put that out on the stoop somewhere?
Yeah, or in the backyard. Yeah. But what I do with at the Botanic Garden, I actually do work in the garden, so that kind of supplements my own garden. But yeah, I'm working on it.
There are a number of programs in Chicago that are in neighborhoods like Englewood mm-hmm. and others where they've yes. taken vacant lots and they've organized gardens. And there are places where for miles around you could only go to like a liquor store and get week-old fruit or, you know, moldy lettuce. And so these kinds of programs have sprung up, and it's really the essence of sort of gardening where you live. But across the country, there's a movement to do that in blighted neighborhoods. And having the kind of degrees that you have, I think you'd be a huge asset to one of these nonprofits that's out there trying to make that happen.
Yeah.
Well, as you're getting ready to get yourself into the job market, do you have any questions that we could help answer?
Yeah, if you know of any organizations within the city or maybe even outside of Chicago, out of the state, I'm open to that too, because I'm not married. I don't have children, so I'm kind of free as a bird right now.
Where are you getting your degree from?
I'm getting my master's from DePaul, right.
From DePaul. Yeah, well, they have a great alumni program,
yes,
and they
do.
Have a wonderful, you know, sort of graduate help get mm-hmm. you a job kind of program. And I would say start sooner rather than later and start to grow your own network of contacts so that when you're ready to go, you're walking into a job the day you walk out of graduation.
Yeah. I've been keeping my eyes and ears open and definitely networking. I haven't burned any bridges. So I make sure that, you know, I still keep in contact with the people that I started off with.
I would just add that even though you don't think you want to be in corporate America, mm-hmm. a lot of the big food companies, they actually have nonprofit foundation arms that mm-hmm. they use to support these different kinds of community mm-hmm. awareness programs. And there may be a spot for you there
yeah.
with a corporate paycheck, not so bad with $40,000 in debt
yeah.
and some benefits. That allows you to have the best of both worlds.
I may go back to corporate America right now. I'm really interested in just working with the local community. We'll see what happens.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
All right, so most important question of all, mm-hmm. what are you going to be growing in your bucket?
Oh, good question. My dad is asking for okra and collards and so a lot of green veggies, tomatoes, of course.
Sounds fabulous.
Yeah.
Well, good luck to you.
Thank you.
Thanks for stopping
by.
Thank
you for having me. I appreciate you.
Well, we've got someone else here sitting at the table with us. Tell us your name and where are you from?
My name is George J. Nedgema Jr. I'm from Crystal Lake, Illinois. However, I'm originally from New Jersey.
New Jersey. How'd you get here to Chicago?
Job.
Job.
I graduated school. I was a Korean War vet. I got the Korean GI Bill. I went to school at night while I worked during the day. We raised six children at the same time. That's what I'm doing in Chicago. I came here for a job to make more money because we had to send them to school.
Good for you. And what are they doing now? Are they all gainfully employed?
No, they're not. The youngest guy, who's 37, he was the one that was unemployed for 3 months. And it was a tragic situation because despite him being well-educated, he couldn't get a job, and he always had a job all of his life. That's the one thing we taught our children. The work ethic. You have to go out there and dig for a job.
But you know, Elise, I think these days, what we all grew up with, which is that, as George was saying, you work hard enough, somebody's going to give you a job. That's just not true anymore.
It's very hard when there are six people applying for every single job that's available. And while there are millions of jobs listed, there are as many as 10 to 15 million people who are looking for jobs. What I am seeing more of is people with several degrees go and get jobs that they're way overqualified for simply to have a job. And a lot of employers are nervous about making that kind of a hire because they're worried that when the market improves, people who have those degrees are going to go on to jobs that they are better qualified for, and then these people will be, you know, sorry, out of luck, and they're going to have to start the hiring process and training process all over again.
And by the way, the amount of college graduates getting jobs graduating is nil.
Yeah.
My granddaughter just graduated from St. Mary's College. Now, of the people that I know of my granddaughter's group, and there was about 10 girls and about 10 guys, two of the guys got jobs and two of the girls got jobs. The other people don't have jobs in their field. So there's $40,000. What's it doing for them?
That's a question a lot of people are asking these days.
Well, right.
What is my college degree really going to get me?
Right. And even if you have a college degree, that seems like it could, you could get a job that pays a lot of money. Some people opt to use those degrees for nonprofit work, or they go to work for other kinds of companies that don't pay as much. And it is a great question. What's the degree getting you for today's job market?
Elise, any advice for George's granddaughter?
You know, I think you have to decide what jobs you're actually able to get. She's got to stay in the game. Getting a little more education is probably a good idea for her to figure out what she ultimately wants to do. But she should keep interviewing. She should network. She should go back to school and work the alumni groups. She's going to have to stay on top of it like everyone else.
Absolutely. But remember, as you just said earlier, Elise, there's, what, 6 or 10 people applying for the same job? And believe me, you're going to take the person that's got more qualifications and more experience than the person that's just graduating college.
How do you make yourself stand out?
You know, when you just start out from college, it seems like you're just going to be handed a job when you get out. But the way that life works now is you have to invent those opportunities for yourself.
So what are you telling your kids and grandkids about money management?
Live within your means.
Well, I couldn't say it any better.
Sounds like a plan.
George, thanks so much.
That's all right. Pleasure meeting you.
We have another subject sitting with us at the table, Vahid.
Yes.
Welcome.
Yeah, I'm from originally from Hawaii, and I just graduated from college.
Where?
University of Hawaii at Hilo. I'm just staying with my parents' family right now, so.
All right. So what brings you to Chicago?
Yeah.
Actually, I'm attending a conference in Schaumburg. It's a high-performance computing conference. My majors are computer science and mathematics.
Whoa. I think I'm in over my head here.
I just have to say, you know, how are you finding the job market? I mean, you've got like some of the most desirable skills I can even imagine.
Yeah, I'm applying around, but I just pretty much graduated, and I figured that this conference would be a good way to network and try to find a job. And I've been applying around, but haven't gotten any responses
when
yet.
Did you start applying?
Maybe a week ago or so.
Oh, really? So you didn't start looking into it before they handed you your diploma?
Yeah, pretty much. So
you must be awfully confident that you're going to find something.
In Hawaii is a little bit more laid back, so we have.
Well, that's true. Well, is there any question we can answer for you about the job hunt?
Yeah, so I was wondering, like, where would be like good places to look for, like, maybe online sources or where to find jobs?
You know, it's interesting. I've hired people, and I've been hearing more and more stories about people getting jobs through Twitter.
Really?
Wow.
So what's happening on Twitter is that you decide you're going to follow somebody who's in your field or your area of expertise, and you start following them and you start to communicate with them through Twitter, sending tweets back and forth. I actually know somebody who got hired at Playboy magazine. She's like their online producer now. She targeted the new editor-in-chief and then created a blog post on her personal blog that said, top 10 reasons why the name of this person should hire me. And then she sent him a tweet with a link. And he clicked on it. And she got the job.
Wow.
So there are really innovative ways going out there for people who, like you, are very connected. I would join LinkedIn. Very important to access all the social networks that you can through LinkedIn and to build up your base as quickly as possible.
Vahid, are you a tweeter?
Not much.
No.
You're young for it. It's interesting. People in their early 20s really aren't using Twitter, but I think it's a very effective social networking tool for people looking for a job particularly.
All right. That sounds good. Yeah. Not a tweeter guy. Not too much into social networking. So.
I'm not a tweeter gal either, but... Now, I do have to ask, any pressure from mom and dad at this point to maybe get out of the house?
It's a little bit different in Hawaii. In Hawaii, it's the way it works in Hawaii, like for most families, is their kids don't move out until they get married, actually.
Did not know that.
So they're basically expecting you to take out the garbage for another few years.
Pretty much, hopefully. And find a job, of course, right. Also for the family. So.
And get married.
Of course, yes.
Well, good luck.
Okay, all right.
Thanks for stopping by.
Thank you.
Well, you can't call in for this week's show, but we do love getting a jump on your questions, so give us a ring for next week. The number is 877-275-6669. That's 877-ASK-MONEY, or you can always write to us. You'll find the Getting Personal link at marketplace.org. Elise Glink, I think we've got some great questions today. Thanks so much for your help.
It's a pleasure.
And as always, be sure to check with your own financial advisor before making any big money decisions. This is Marketplace Money from American Public Media. We just heard plenty of good advice on how to navigate a tough job market, but the single best tool to get your foot in the door? Your resume. So this week I sat down with Jason Ferrara of CareerBuilder.com, which is based here in Chicago, and we asked for his thoughts on what should and most certainly should not appear on your resume.
I know you have seen hundreds of thousands of resumes in this position, so what is the worst thing that you've ever seen someone do with their resume?
Some people have sent their resume through on personal stationery, but personal stationery that, you know, had pictures of teddy bears on it, for example, which, unless it's a teddy bear manufacturing company, is it's probably not exactly what you need to be sending. Gaps in employment, there was one, the job seeker explained their gap in employment because they were in prison.
Oh, boy.
The reason they were in prison is because this person had stolen a pig, but that it was only a small pig. So it wasn't that big of an infraction.
To think I was worried about having my resume spill onto two pages. You can hear all of Ferrara's tricks and tips, plus a resume makeover for one lucky listener at marketplace.org. This is Marketplace Money from American Public Media. I'm Tess Vigeland, and we are in Chicago this week to explore the national employment crisis. For college grads, the relief of getting that diploma is now morphing into fear about finding a job. It's a terrible time for experienced workers, so imagine if you don't have any. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman came to Chicago to take the pulse of today's young worker wannabes.
Sarah Jane Biesterfeld Magna Cum Laude. George Andre Blanco.
I'm way up in the cheap seats at Loyola University, Chicago, watching a few hundred business school graduates get their diplomas. There's the cheers, the fist bumps,
thank you. We gotta take a picture.
And the reality check.
My name is George Blanco. I'm 21 years old, coming out with a degree in marketing and sport management. And my initial plan in the job search is to get a job, because I don't have one right now.
I sat down to talk about jobs with Blanco and eight other seniors a few days before graduation at Loyola's Career Center.
I can recall a specific dream I had where if I made a winning free throw, I would get a job, and I missed the free throw with an air ball.
Blanco and the others did just what they were supposed to in their senior year, emailed hundreds of resumes, networked furiously on LinkedIn and with alumni. Want to know what they've landed?
I've been hired by an architectural boat tour here in Chicago, and I will be working as a bartender.
Moving back home to Kansas for not sure.
I am stuck in retail indentured servitude at Urban Outfitters.
I actually have an internship with a public relations firm in Chicago.
At least advertising major Brian Remy got an actual position in his field. Of course, it's temporary. No guarantee the summer internship will turn into a fall job.
Not only are they competing with all the other amazing universities in the city of Chicago.
Darby Sism heads up Loyola's Career Center.
But they're competing with people who've been laid off who have 3, 5, 7, 10, 15 years of experience. I've heard from a few students, you know, I'm not going to find anything anyway, so why even start looking now?
Why? Because if history's any guide, coming right out of the gate into a terrible job market could leave these college grads at the back of the career pack for a long time. Lisa Kahn is a labor economist at the Yale School of Management.
It's early in a career when workers should be doing a lot of learning about their job, learning by doing, on-the-job training. Even if an unlucky college graduate could shift into a better job, they're extremely far behind because they've missed out on a crucial couple of years.
And many of today's grads may never really catch up, says Kahn, becoming a kind of lost generation. Kahn's been following the people who stumbled out of college into the deep recession of the early 1980s.
If you wanted to add up their earnings losses for the first 20 years of their career, they're earning about $100,000 less.
And career advancement, it isn't just delayed, it can stall out.
Young workers are supposed to move jobs often because that's how they get pay increases, that's often how they get promotions.
But the 1980s recession newbies stayed put in lower level positions or didn't move around as much.
They could be a little gun shy to leave because they were sort of scarred by the difficulty of finding a job the first time around. Being placed in a lower level job in a worse firm because, you know, they took whatever they could, they're not gaining the right skills to be able to move along to the better jobs.
and don't think any of this is lost on today's grads.
I remember the first time I heard about those statistics.
That's Katie Schaff from Loyola. She's the one with the bartending job on the architecture tour boat.
And I was with my parents at the time, and I did the total teenage thing of, you don't understand, you don't know what it's like. And they're like, actually, we graduated from college in the 70s. We totally understand.
And since the 70s, says Khan, there's one thing stressed out young people have always done to deal with their bad timing.
When there's an economic downturn, everybody wants to go back to school because the opportunity cost is quite low. If you don't have a job, you might as well be in school.
To see where this leads, I head to Columbia College Chicago. It's a prestigious art school downtown. Jeffrey Allen's 26. He landed a good job after college teaching theater to kids, but once the recession began, he couldn't find steady work.
I'm always scrounging around for a job. I don't really foresee myself getting married, starting a family, settling down, quote-unquote, anytime soon, just because I simply can't afford to.
Alan and some friends are hanging out at Columbia College's Summer Street Festival. They're banging out verses on a manual typewriter for a poetry slam hosted by the school's writing program, which is where Alan has taken temporary refuge from the economy.
I had a few jobs and I got laid off, spent 5 months on unemployment, and decided, this is stupid, I'm going back to grad school.
And then you pick poetry.
Yes, then I pick poetry.
And who knows, in this economy, it just might work. In Chicago, I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace Money.
The job picture is almost as bleak for those on the other end of their careers. In fact, if you're over 55, the Bureau of Labor Statistics says you're likely to stay unemployed 30% longer than other workers. Sherry McClendon of Chicago's Southside knows that truth firsthand. She's been unemployed since January of 2008. WBEZ's Ashley Gross has her story.
For most of her adult life, 58-year-old Sherry McClendon has been the picture of job stability. In 34 years, she's had just four employers. But since she was laid off well over 2 years ago, she's sent out hundreds of job applications. She's even tried Burger King and Walmart with no luck. At this point, she'd be glad to have just about anything.
I never thought I would say that 10 years ago. Probably would have turned my nose up, but how humble we get. How very humble we get.
Humble, but practical. McClendon had been making $27,000 a year working at a call center for a health insurance company. But then came the axe.
You know, they let us go, and I called my sister, and I said, you know, guess what? And she said, they let you go. And I said, yeah. And she said, well, how much unemployment? I said, 6 months. Oh, you'll find something. I said, gee, I hope you're right.
Well, turns out her sister was not right. Her unemployment benefits ran out in March. She hasn't paid rent for May or June. And every visit to the supermarket has become a quest for the biggest bargain.
Got a sale going. I like to grab it when they have that 2 for $7.
McClendon heads out with a week's worth of food for $25. Outside, she bumps into a guy named Eddie, whom she's paid in the past to help her carry groceries. She tells him as nicely as possible to buzz off.
Get out of here.
Say happy birthday.
Happy birthday, my man. Get out of here, Eddie. I ain't got it, my man. Take it easy. Happy birthday.
You wouldn't know it to hear her. But talk to McClendon and you realize she's angry and dismayed at where she's landed.
I got this stable work history, good resume, not too many breaks, you know. And then I had saw on the internet or somewhere, reading or blogging or whatever, and kept running into this older worker category. And that's when the light came on. You know, I said, oh my gosh, you know, I'm 55, 56, 57, I'm in that category.
What age is the worst to be unemployed? It's probably between 55 and 60.
That's Teresa Ghilarducci. She's an economics professor at the New School for Social Research. Older workers are less likely to lose their jobs compared with the population as a whole. But once they do, they stay unemployed longer than younger workers. Ghilarducci says it all comes down to how employers view older workers.
They look at an older worker as requiring more money, you know, higher wages, higher health care costs, and the employer is bound to think that the older worker is not going to learn as fast or actually have higher productivity over time.
As for Sherry McClendon, she does have some good news. For the first time since a short-lived temp job in fall 2008,
She has a place to go in the mornings.
We usually push out at like 8 o'clock, a little after 8.
She waits for the express bus that heads along Chicago's lakefront to downtown, the first of three buses McClendon will take to her new part-time job. It's part of a government training program at a senior center. McClendon gets $8 an hour for 20 hours a week to work in the kitchen at the retirement home. And McClendon wants to use her skills to get back into office work. To keep them fresh, she takes an online typing test every other day.
I post it on my Facebook so you don't get lost into that woe is me kind of mindset, you know.
Have a good day, driver.
She tells the driver to have a nice day as she changes buses on her way to the senior center. It's a job she never thought she'd have, but like a lot of people in this economy, she's just grateful for a paycheck. In Chicago, I'm Ashley Gross for Marketplace Money.
Marketplace Money is supported by Thomson Reuters, a source of intelligent information to businesses and professionals around the world. Thomson Reuters, knowledge to act. American Public Media presents The Great Textbook War, an American Radio Works documentary supported by the Batten Institute at the University of Virginia's Darden School of Business. More at AmericanRadioWorks.org.
It's not all bad news on the job front, of course. Plenty of people have found and taken advantage of opportunity in the midst of this recession. WBEZ producer Joe Dassault has this profile of a young man who went from carpenter to building with kids' toys all day long here in Chicago.
My name is Daniel Mori, and I'm the master model builder here for the Legoland Discovery Center Schaumburg. When I started out, I worked for a carpenter contractor, and the first couple of years I started, there were between 500 and 600 carpenters working for that one contractor. We were quite large, but by the time I was about 24 years old, and you know, the market started to really go down, so was our business, and we started to lay off more and more carpenters. But I was still there when other guys were leaving. I was being promoted even, and so I hope that there would be a career for me when the recession hopefully just kind of faded and went back to normal. But it never really did. So about 6 months probably before the Legoland Discovery Center opened, I was speaking with my girlfriend at the time, now my fiance, and she had just signed on to this account, and they were doing the PR for Legoland Discovery Center. Right around that time, they also needed a master model builder, so she tells me, like, oh, they're going to have this contest for a model builder. You should sign up. They give me 1 hour to build whatever I want, so I built a little kid's Happy Meal. The judges liked it. There are kids for judges. They loved it, so the more interviews I went on, the more I spoke with Lego, and they really painted this great, great picture for me, and it seemed like it was better, which I couldn't even believe. It was better than what I had at the time. Working for Legoland really opened my eyes to a whole different kind of satisfaction. We have kids coming in, and I'm teaching them the values that I learned as a kid. So I'm kind of helping the next generation of engineers and architects and doctors and lawyers come in, and they're learning, they're building their brain skills, and their synapses are firing, and maybe even thanks to me or thanks to Legoland itself, they're going to have these skills that they're going to take with them for the rest of their lives. Old Crow Christensen was the guy who originally invented Lego, and he was a carpenter. I think that's one of the defining moments for this career, too. It really makes me appreciate this kind of work, because the guy who started this all started in a workshop like I used to have from a carpenter who, you know, I was the carpenter myself. But that's always in my mind, like, you know, it always came from a carpenter, too, and it kind of, right now, it's ending with a carpenter.
Dan Mori speaking with us in Chicago. And finally, as we wrap up our week in Chicago, we couldn't leave without a nod to one of this city's greatest cultural contributions, the blues, and what that music might say about our subject of job loss. So we made a pilgrimage to Alligator Records, an independent record label that's released more than 250 albums from such legends as Coco Taylor, Robert Cray, and Buddy Guy. We caught up with the label's founder in the midst of a busy week.
Sean?
Yes.
Yeah, I've got my phone on Do Not Disturb. For the next few minutes, I'm going to do this interview.
All right.
Bruce Iglauer, so nice to chat with you. Thanks for inviting us into your office here.
I'm glad to have you. Thanks.
Now, we asked you to send us some blues songs in preparation for this conversation, and I'd like to start with a Chicago native, John Brim, and his song, Tough Times.
I'm broke and disgusted in misery. Can't find a part-time job. Nothing in my house to eat.
So there you go, right there. You don't have a job. It was pretty common to be out of work in the 40s and 50s and 60s, especially if you were a black man in America. This song is a reflection of that?
This was actually recorded in 1953, which was one of the many recessions we had during the 1950s. And yeah, a lot of black people in Chicago and, of course, elsewhere were working hard labor jobs, some of them for cash, which would mean no benefits, no unemployment. So when the economy got tight, jobs got lost and people were scared.
And that's something fairly easy to make music out of, isn't it? Misery?
You know, the blues isn't all about misery. The blues is really designed to help you get through your misery. They say in Chicago you listen to the blues to get rid of the blues.
Now, there were obviously a lot of prominent women blues singers and musicians. I think this is one that a lot of folks will have heard of. Bessie Smith recorded this song, Nobody Knows You When You're Down and Out, in the 1920s.
In my pocket, not one penny, and my friends, I haven't any.
So she's talking there about in my pocket, one penny. That's tough.
You know, a lot of blues artists really still live kind of day to day and week to week, you know, playing for cash, living in rental places because they can't get credit to buy a house. Being a blues artist is a hard life, but it's also something you do to avoid being unemployed.
Was it something that musicians talked about outside of the music that they were making?
In the black community, amongst the musicians and amongst the fans, unemployment was so common that it wasn't always talked about. But, you know, everybody had a hustle. Everybody had a way of putting cash in their pocket. In fact, there's another song that we picked for this show from the early 50s, T-Bone Walker's The Hustle Is On, which is exactly about that subject.
Well, let's take a listen
yes,
to that.
Time is hard, baby, and hustling is really on. Prices are high, darling, and all the good jobs are gone.
Well, that's an awfully upbeat job loss song, unemployment song.
Well, you're going to have to dance your unemployment away.
I wanted to ask you how this is playing out now. Obviously, blues artists must be watching and experiencing what's going on in our economy right now. What are they singing about?
When President Obama was elected to office, there was a great deal of excitement. But when the economy kept turning sour, there have been artists who have been complaining very clearly about that subject and feeling, like many of us, that maybe some of the government help should be going not just to banks, but to the average working man or working woman. So Guitar Shorty recently cut a song on exactly that subject.
Please, Mr. President, lay some stimulus on me. 'Cause I'm just a working man trying to feed my family.
Wow, yeah, he's really asking for his own financial bailout there and speaking to the president from right here in this city.
And I think he's feeling that the president ought to be listening.
Bruce Iglauer is the president and founder of Alligator Records, the 40-year-old Chicago-based independent blues record label. It's been awfully fun having a chat with you. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Thanks for inviting me.
Curious how Alligator Records got its name? Head to marketplace.org for the backstory. And while you're there, don't miss our video of Chicagoans telling us their dream jobs. Nobody wanted to be Oprah. And that's our show from the Second City. Thanks this week to Buddy Guy's Legends Club. Much of the music you've heard is from their open mic session earlier this week. And a shout out to our good friends at WBEZ here in Chicago for placing us on your big shoulders. There's a lot more on our website, marketplace.org. Marketplace Money is produced by Deborah Clark, Caitlin Carroll, and Jolie Myers. Help this week from producer Rod Abid. Our technical director is Josh Rogerson. Our executive producer is J.J. Yore. I'm Tess Vigeland. We'll see you next week.
There's a lot packed into an hour of Marketplace Money. Check it out again on our website at marketplace.org or take the show with you. Download the show by clicking on the subscribe to podcast link and never miss an episode again.
Marketplace Money is supported by Putnam Investments, offering strategies for investors seeking both returns and lower volatility. On the web at putnam.com/absolute return. American Public Media.